Mountain State Mysteries contains mature themes and discussions that may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised. All individuals mentioned in this episode are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey, y'all. I'm your host, Mark Covey.
And I'm Courtney.
And this is Mountain State Mysteries. The case we have for you today, Pull Me In Deep, it's one of the most notorious cases from West Virginia, one that involves a death ruled as suicide, and one of the biggest conspiracies to hit the Mountain State. This is the case of Danny Casolaro. Joseph Danny Casolaro II was born on June 16, 1947, in McLean, Virginia, to Joseph Daniel Casolaro I and Frances Phyllis Casolaro. Danny was the second of six siblings in his Italian Catholic family. Sadly, one of his siblings passed away shortly after birth. Another named Lisa passed away after suffering a drug overdose in San Francisco.
It's really sad.
It really is. Danny went to Providence College, but left prematurely in 1968.
Any idea why he dropped out?
I try to find out why, but sadly, I couldn't find anything on it. Not too long after leaving college, he married Terrell Pace, a former Miss Virginia, and in 1969, the couple had a son, Joseph Casolaro III, who they called Trey. The couple settled down in Fairfax, Virginia, but sadly, after 13 years together, they decided to divorce in 1982, with the court granting legal custody of Trey to Danny.
Ooh, that is big.
Is it?
Oh my God, like very rarely did the dad ever get custody back in the day. I mean, the mom had to be pretty bad off.
Yeah. He loved hanging out with friends and even hanging out in bars and making new friends. I have to tell you this for a second because I know you're going to love it.
Okay.
Danny was actually a member of the Edgar Allan Poe Society.
I love it.
Same.
I love the Telltale Heart.
Same. That is literally my favorite book and movie.
And I will also tell you, so when I was in high school, one of my classmates, he was running for prom king. And one of his things to get people to vote for him was he quoted The Raven.
I love it.
Like, we were so tore up when he didn't win. He lost literally by like two votes.
Oh, yeah. I know how that is. I lost something by one vote and high school, and I was so mad.
Them losers.
Yeah. Oh my God. Who is Vincent Price? All of the Edgar Allan Poe Vincent Price movies. I had every single one on DVD. I have no idea where they are. I loved them. Loved them.
What was Danny doing job-wise?
He worked as a freelance writer, and for the year before his death, he had been working on a very secret project revolving around government corruption and fraud.
Yes.
I knew you would love it. His story began as an inquiry into the computer software theft, which snowballed and turned into what is now referred to as the Octopus. If the story was proven to be true, Danny could implicate very high-ranking officials within the United States Justice Department. Days before his death, Danny had confided in some friends that he felt like he was really close to breaking the story. On August 8, 1991, Danny traveled from his home in Fairfax, Virginia to Martinsburg, West Virginia, which is around like an hour and a half drive, which in all honesty, I kind of feel like we may have went through there or went by there.
If I know us well enough, even if we have done this one time, we'll do it.
Yeah, like I can fully see us doing it like our next trip to DC.
Yes.
I mean, you know my love for Fairfax, our near-death experience.
Oh, by the way, do you know that the pharmacy? We were reading the contract.
Oh, yeah. Like, traffic was so bad when we went to Crime Junkie Live. Like, I was stressed out because we were running late anyway. I accidentally booked 2 hotel rooms. Like, traffic was so bad. I was reading my owner's manual and, like, the contract for work. And Courtney's just over there like, oh, your gas light just came on. And I'm like, this isn't helping my stress. I need a beta blocker.
I'm like, it's fine. We got plenty. We'll make it.
During his trip, he planned on meeting with several people who he believed could provide vital documentation that would support his story regarding the octopus and, you know, kind of finish his investigation. He checked into the Sheraton and was given room 517. Now, from the timeline of his final 48 hours, it kind of took me the most time to get because, you know me, I wanted everything to be perfect and accurate. So, Court, are you ready to get pulled in by the tentacles of the octopus?
Honey, get them suckers ready and put them on me and suck me in. I am ready. You know better than anybody besides my family how much I love conspiracy theories.
I knew this was going to, and this is why I kept this case so secret from you. I'm like, I know she's going to love every single thing about this case.
I love conspiracy theories. I actually have a group of when I go to certain stores, that's what we talk about.
Yeah.
It's conspiracy theories.
Okay. So it began around 1 p.m. when he checked into the Sheraton at 301 Foxcroft Avenue in Martinsburg, which it's still there. You know, we're going to have to stay there one day. James Victor Lopez, who was the shift supervisor when Danny checked in, recalled that he didn't go up to his room right away.
A little bit odd.
Right.
I mean, typically you want to go up there, drop your luggage off.
Freshen up.
Yeah. Maybe go out, something
change
of that
clothes.
Nature.
But he said that he was late for an appointment. After he was given his room key, and like I'm not talking a card, like they did it the Glen Ferris way. You had a key to get into your hotel room. He left the Sheraton Hotel, but he was spotted at the Stone Crab Inn bar where he ordered a bottle of wine and ate some shrimp cocktail.
Oh, I love shrimp cocktail.
See, I only like cooked or grilled shrimp.
It's cooked. It's cooked. It just...
Yeah, it's just...
It's cold.
Yeah, I don't like that it's cold.
Oh, my God.
I'm weird.
Squeeze lemon on it.
Around 2:30 or 3:30, he was spotted at the Pizza Hut located down the road from his hotel. Staff recalled that he ordered a pitcher of beer and a small thin crust pizza.
Can we just talk really quick? Like, that's an odd combo. I mean,
yeah.
Not out of the weirdness of me. I mean, I could see myself eating shrimp cocktail and then getting a pizza, but still.
Yeah, and like I found it a little odd that, you know, Pizza Hut was selling beer and stuff. But then I remembered in Patricia Sue Richmond's case, Long John Silver served beer and stuff.
Oh my God, like Pizza Hut? It was like the entire thing. Like you could get a pitcher of beer for like next to nothing.
It was said that he took interest in one of the waitresses and would ask questions here and there. He was said to have a newspaper and sat alone while at Pizza Hut.
A little after 5 p.m., he met with a possible Iranian man in the hotel lounge, Heatherfield's. Bar staff confirmed that the two consumed around 4 beers each and ordered food off the happy hour menu. The foreign man paid for the meal and left a little before 7:30 p.m. and then Danny found a place at the bar.
Around 8 p.m., Mike Looney, who was actually staying across the hall from Danny, entered Heatherfield's and sat down right next to Danny at the bar. According to Mike, Danny was seen talking to 2 women wearing tights on the other side of him when he first arrived. Not too long after they left, Danny and Mike struck up a conversation where Danny told him details about his book and the octopus. Mike admitted to playing devil's advocate throughout the night in response to some of Danny's crazy government conspiracy claims.
If we are learning anything right now, folks, anything, anything that people are saying is a conspiracy is going to somewhat have truth.
Oh, 100%.
Expelled into it.
100%.
Like, anything of that nature. And honestly, I could see where things are starting, like, back in the day and everything. Like, you didn't hear people talking about that many conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
If you did, people were considered crazy and not to pay no attention to them and things of that nature. Yeah. But I find it very interesting that it was an Iranian man who was having dinner with him.
Oh, it gets better. He did mention that Danny said he was to meet with an Iranian man.
His beer buddy?
It's actually never been confirmed, but that's kind of how I took it.
Hmm. Any idea on why he was meeting this man or why he was meeting him again?
It was said that he was going to receive some documents from this guy. Not too long after 11 p.m., Danny got up to make a phone call. He returned about 20 minutes later and said that his source had blown him off. The two stayed at the bar until last call. They both returned to their rooms. Mike said that he left Danny at the bar, but he did hear the door to his room close about 10 minutes after he got back to his room.
Okay. I've already got questions going.
Okay.
Was he positive it was Danny who went into that room?
I mean, he didn't see anyone, so he was kind of just guessing.
And what time did he think that he heard all this?
It was around 12:10 a.m. One thing that Mike kept thinking about is how they were sitting at the bar and Danny was talking to him, but then he turned around and asked a man sitting behind them if he worked for the IRS. The man nodded and got up and left the bar within minutes of this exchange.
Maybe the tea is cooking.
It really is.
Like, I mean, we're not at the steaming stage, but we's getting close to it.
Oh, you have no idea.
It's a little weird.
Oh, 100%.
Hey y'all, I'm Elisa.
And I'm Samantha.
And welcome to Watch for Deer Podcast. We're a couple of best friends from Southern West Virginia, and around here, Watch for Deer is our way of saying we love you and be safe.
This is a conversational podcast that covers many topics from A to Z, including, but not limited to, true crime and the paranormal. Our goal is to bring you an episode a week, so come listen as we tell stories that will make you laugh and maybe even blow your mind. Y'all be safe
and watch for deer.
Which after this, Danny made a reference that he was playing with some bad boys in order to get the necessary information for his book. Mike said it was like the whole evening Danny was on guard, as though he thought someone was watching him, and he kept looking over his shoulder throughout the night. He also mentioned that he was very concerned for his safety.
I 100% understand everything.
Yeah.
Things of that nature. But at the same time, if he's so worried about all of this and things of that nature, why was he in public?
You know, honestly, I'm not sure. I guess kind of maybe he thought it was a safe place to be where no one would kind of try anything. Because back in the day, it was a different time. I'm not sure if anyone would go into a hotel lounge, shoot it up, or kill someone. That's the only thing I could come up with. On the morning of Friday, August 9th, 1991, Danny told James Lopez that he would be staying another night at the hotel. The housekeeping staff said that Danny stopped them in the hallway and asked for his room to be cleaned between 12 and 12:30.
Okay, just a very specific time.
Yeah.
In and of itself is weird.
Right.
That is weird.
Yeah. I thought so.
But just going and saying, hey, I need to add another night on, if that's no issue.
Yeah.
I don't see an issue with that at all.
Me neither.
But just that time frame between noon and 12:30 is just...
Yeah, it is. The housekeeper who cleaned his room said that she saw a briefcase and some documents in the room at the time. She said that she did not remember seeing any prescription pill bottles or razor blades on the counter. The entire hotel staff said that Danny was friendly and polite throughout his stay. Around 2 p.m., Danny met with an informant, William Turner, where he was given hard copies of documents which supported his research. Turner said that Danny had a cardboard accordion file with him at the time of their meeting, and that it only lasted around 45 minutes. He also said that Danny said he plans to meet with two members of Senator Robert C. Byrd's staff.
Time frame.
It was never mentioned. After this, Danny was seen at the bar at the Stone Crab Inn around 3 p.m., which the bartender said he seemed to be in a sad mood. According to some statements, he seemed down and depressed, honestly like he wanted to talk to someone but he knew the bartender was busy. He drank beer throughout his time there and said that he didn't appear to be drunk at any point. Not too long after 6 p.m., his family confirmed that he called his mom from a payphone saying that he wouldn't be at family dinner for that evening. He said that he planned to stay another day or more in Martinsburg. His family said that, you know, that was kind of typical for Danny, that he would always show up late or not even show up at all. The final confirmed sighting of Danny that I know of happened shortly after midnight on August 10th, 1991, when he was spotted at a Sheetz close to the hotel.
I just love that they normalized that it was just typical of him to show up late or not even to show up.
Right.
But it makes me wonder how, after he was said to be meeting with two members of Robert Byrd's staff, that he then just seemed to be down in a, I don't know if you want to say necessarily depressive mood, but definitely upset.
Yeah.
And things of that nature. And it just makes me wonder, did they cancel? And if so, was that the reason why he was upset?
See, I don't know.
I mean, I could get it thinking, oh my God, this is huge. I'm getting major inside info. And then possibility of a no-show, things of that nature. Yeah. I mean, I can honestly get it.
Yeah. According to what I've seen in reports, Danny bought a coffee and chatted with the cashier and someone else in the store. They said that he didn't appear to be nervous, afraid, and said that he was very kind and polite. The cashier actually gave Danny his coffee on the house because he had to wait for it. After that, he started in the direction of the Sheraton Hotel. This was the last time Danny Casolaro was seen alive.
Around 12:30 p.m. on August 10, 1991, housekeeping arrived to room 517 to clean. When the housekeeper entered the room, she was horrified by what she seen. The bed looked like it had been unslept in, and men's clothing was laying neatly across the foot of the bed. When she approached the bathroom, she stopped in her tracks. The floor was bright red, and that's all she needed to see. She ran to the bedside table, called the assistant head housekeeper, and said that she needed to come to room 517 ASAP. The scene in the bathroom was described as a horror movie. A half a bottle of wine set next to the toilet, an ashtray by the tub, pieces of broken glass was scattered everywhere. Blood was splattered all over the walls. Two towels were crumpled up on the floor beneath the sink. They were soaked in blood. According to the housekeeper, it looked like someone used the towels to wipe up the blood with their food. The housekeeper called 911.
Now, Courtney, I know that we have seen these pictures of the crime scene. We cannot release them because they are so graphic. But do you want to describe them to everyone?
Well, in one, you do see blood splatter on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that looks like multiple pictures put together to make one picture.
Yeah.
But you see Danny in the tub.
Mm-hmm.
Blood is everywhere. The bathtub is dark red from the amount of blood in it. In another, you see the wine bottle in the floor, and Danny's left arm is over the side of the tub.
When police arrived, they saw Danny's lifeless body in the tub. He was identified by his driver's license. His wrists had a dozen gashes in them, 8 on the left and 4 on the right, with one being deep enough to sever a tendon. Court, I have to ask, did you see the shoestring in the pictures?
There were shoestrings.
Around Danny's neck was a shoestring, and I mean, when I heard this, I was like, there's no way. But then I zoomed in, and you can actually see it. It's like very small, and you can tell it's a white shoestring or a light-colored shoestring. And, you know, where the water is such like a deep red color, basically black in the pictures, you kind of miss that there's like trash can liners floating in the water as well. Authorities found a single edge razor, a paper coaster, and an empty old Milwaukee beer can. After this, they drained the tub.
I'm sorry. You know where my mind's already going.
Oh, I know.
There's no way that this was a suicide.
No. No way.
No way. None. I mean, a shoestring.
Yeah.
Is not going to be strong enough for a person to hang themselves.
No, especially if you've slit your wrist and deep enough that a tendon is cut on one. Like, there's no way.
Not only that, but it wouldn't support his weight.
Yeah, and the trash bags. Like, what's up with those in the bathtub? Like,
I mean, my entire thing is, like, how could they say that this hinted to a suicide?
Well, they discovered a note on his, like, bedroom desk. And, Court, I have it in the document. Care to read it?
It said, quote, "To those who I love the most, please forgive me for the worst possible thing I could have done most of all. I'm sorry to my son. I knew deep down inside that God will let me in," end quote.
So here's my thing about his letter. And this is like why I question this case so much and why I've been down this rabbit hole, you know, like at the Mariana Trench, I guess, with this octopus. Danny was Catholic. And suicide is like the worst thing you could do as a Catholic. So to me, when he said, "I know God will let me in," that's kind of Danny being a smart writer saying, "I was murdered." Like, he knew this was going to happen.
1,000%. If there's any one thing, that is the reason why they have whistleblower laws to help protect, but they don't always protect. Mm-hmm. There has been numerous people who their homes have been bugged. They have had to move. They've had to enter into,
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
They give them a new identity. Yeah. They had a witness protection program.
Yeah.
Get it. But like, honestly, I could see where that right there is saying he's murdered, because this is major.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the day, you didn't hear of that many things coming out with the whistleblowers. I mean, I can remember a couple of big whistleblower cases when I was younger. Mainly one of the biggest ones was the tech company in the early 2000s. I'm drawing a blank on it.
Yeah, I have no idea.
It starts with an E, but there's so many of these laws because people are risking their lives to expose what this is. And just the fact alone that he knew somebody worked for the IRS.
Yeah.
I mean, that's inside right there. Yeah. And then mentioning with senators and things of that nature. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's just a lot about this that makes no sense whatsoever. You have glass all over the place. Now, let me tell you something about the old school ashtrays. This lady we know, my dad smoked like nobody's business back in the day. She gave us an ashtray. That sucker was about that big around. It had coins in the bottom of it. That thing easily weighed 10 pounds. But you got glass all around, and that ashtray is untouched.
See, how I took it, and I don't know if, like, hotels would have done this back in the day like they do now. A glass in the room, like, for water, like, in the bathroom.
Well, I mean, you had smoking, non-smoking rooms back in the day.
Which I have no idea if Danny smoked or not.
But I'm just saying, that ashtray, glass all around, and that ashtray is untouched.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if it's up there and I'm slitting my wrist, I'm sure I'm going to have a reaction and hit it.
Yeah, which it could have also been a wine glass because he was drinking wine. That just did click into my head. It could have been a wine glass.
Yeah, but I'm just saying for that ashtray not to be untouched is suspicious to me.
Oh, 100%.
Somebody didn't do a good job. at this plot.
Oh, just wait.
Mm-mm. They didn't do a good job. They were messy with the crime scene. Yeah.
What authorities were able to recover from the hotel room was Danny's personal items, money, credit card, and suitcase. There was no sign of forced entry, robbery, or really anything that would indicate that a struggle took place.
Did we fingerprint?
They did, but the only fingerprints that came back were Danny's. Later that evening, Danny was taken to Brown's funeral home in Martinsburg. His body was embalmed before his family even was notified about his death.
Folks, let's just talk really quick about one thing. If they're telling you that a body has to be embalmed, they're lying. There is no laws against it. You choose whether or not your loved one is to be embalmed or not embalmed. And it just blows my mind that they would go ahead and automatically embalm. Blood's drained. Everything's going to be out of his system with embalming. And you embalm a body without calling the family and being like, hey, by the way, your son was found in this condition.
Just wait.
Boo.
Just wait.
Boo.
Although, like you said, embalming isn't required in West Virginia, the family does have to say, you know, yes or no to it.
Yes.
On August 12th, 1991, Danny's mother, Frances, received a call from law enforcement in Martinsburg. They told her Danny was dead. She immediately called her son, Anthony, to tell him. Then he reached out to the Martinsburg Police Department to try to get more information. After the call, he started to question a lot of things.
He was shocked to learn that not only had Danny's death been ruled a suicide, but that his death happened 2 days before any of the family had been notified. Anthony said that about a week before Danny's trip, he told him that he had been receiving threatening phone calls about his work exposing the octopus. He told his brother, quote, if I die, do not believe it was an accident, end quote. Anthony knew that Danny had an extreme dislike to blood and needles. He said that if Danny chose to take his own life, he think he would have done it in a different manner.
An autopsy was performed at the family's request, and his body was transferred from the Browns' funeral home to the West Virginia Hospital in Morgantown. Chief Medical Examiner James Frost conducted the autopsy.
Results were?
It indicated that Danny had died as a result of a slash to his wrist, which at the end of the day just says his death was ruled a suicide. The information from the autopsy report would not come to light until after Danny's family pressed for it. At the time of his death, he had a bruise on his arm and another on his head, which to me suggests that, you know, he kind of wasn't alone in the hotel room that night. And one thing that I've noticed from this is that it said three of his fingernails had been removed.
Okay, you know, I know. That's not normal.
No. And like, to me, it could have been removed by someone or, you know, he could have had an accident where like his three fingernails didn't grow. Was it three?
Yes.
Yeah, like three fingernails could have like stopped growing on his fingers or something like that. But like, it's just crazy to me for that to happen.
But do you know as well? Well, I don't know how much you had to study in barber school.
I had like an hour of nail tech.
There has to be so much damage done.
Yeah.
For a nail to come off.
Yeah.
And it don't immediately do that. No. It has to be over a period of time to where that nail grows out and then falls off. And then it's going to start a regrowth process. Yeah. Yeah, no. No sense whatsoever.
No. The toxicology report showed that Danny had traces of antidepressants and painkillers in his system at the time of his death. Which, like, this wasn't a shock because prescription pill bottles, you know, they were found in his room. The autopsy said at the time of his death, there was no alcohol present in his system.
So?
Yes.
Allegedly, he wasn't drinking?
Well, I mean, he was.
According to that autopsy, there was nothing in there.
I know.
And
a bottle of wine was found next to him, but no alcohol was in his system.
Not only that, but there would have been beer.
Mm-hmm.
Wine from the previous day.
Yeah.
Things of that nature.
Yeah.
I mean, it just... Are we playing cover up?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. When Anthony inquired about his brother's research, he was shocked to find that none of his paperwork Danny had brought with him. He was shocked to find that none of the paperwork Danny had brought with him or was given to him while on his trip was recovered from his hotel room. To this day, in 2026, all of Danny's paperwork is still missing. And, you know, I do want to point out that a former girlfriend of Danny's said that the matter of his death was, like, unlikely to be suicide because Danny didn't like to be seen naked. His girlfriend at the time said in a statement given to Fairfax investigators that Danny would have not killed himself.
Hey, y'all, I'm Dan, and I host a podcast called Kinfolk, Stories of Community and Connection. I talk with folks from all over Appalachia, artists, small business owners, local legends, you name it. We share real stories about what brings us together, what keeps us going, and all the magic tucked away in these hills. If you're into small town charm, big hearts, and good conversation, come hang out with me on Kinfolk. You can find it wherever you get your podcast.
Hi, I'm Shane.
I'm Hannah.
And we're Country Roads Creeps. We're a podcast that covers all manner of creepy, spooky stories, from cryptids and conspiracies to unexplained deaths and disappearances to mysterious and paranormal happenings in the world.
You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and pretty much anywhere you listen to podcasts. Check out our Facebook page and our Instagram account at Country Roads Creeps for photo dumps and more information we'll post with every episode.
If you enjoy the show, please feel free to share us with your friends and leave us a 5-star review. And if there's any topics that you'd like to hear us cover in the future, feel free to message us on our social media accounts. Is that it?
That's it.
All right. Well, be safe driving home and watch out for the not deer.
Bye.
Bye.
As investigators probed deeper into Danny's death, they learned that in the months leading up to his death, he had been receiving threatening calls, like I said earlier. His housekeeper even told investigators that Danny advised her to be careful while coming in and out of his house. She said that she had taken several of the calls herself, including one final one on Saturday, August 10th, 1991.
Did her girl say what the call was?
Well, it happened around 8:30 p.m., and she said that it was an unknown person that said, "You're dead, you son of a bitch," before hanging up the phone.
Not suspicious at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
So after his death, the Sheraton Hotel had his room 517 professionally cleaned following the removal of his body.
Mm-hmm. We're not trying to get rid of a crime scene.
Yeah, no, like, I guess it didn't matter after his body was removed and it was, like, ruled suicide. Basically, with the hotel cleaning it, it compromised the entire crime scene.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I have to question, which I did touch on for a second, was the embalming of his body before getting permission from his family. Like, it is a federal law, and the board has taken action on funeral homes for doing this before.
Did they contact the Browns funeral home?
Your guess is, like, as good as mine. I wasn't able to find anything in my research.
I guess they could have talked to the family, but I mean, considering that it was 2 days after his death before family was notified and that his body was already embalmed, I mean, you know.
But here's my thing. What if they thought they talked to someone in his family? Like, it kind of like popped into my head, like, all of this happened, like, who's to say someone didn't, like, have his mom's name and was like, "I would love for my son to be embalmed."
Not only that, but somebody's like at this given point, they're like pretending to be family. I mean, you had to have some good info
mm-hmm.
for something like this.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just thinking that, like, it's not proven, like, it's all alleged from my head, but, like, good possibility. I know this is going to be your favorite part of the episode because I know, like, you are the bigger conspiracy theorist out of us.
Oh my God. We've already talked about this. I love a good conspiracy theory. Yeah.
So in 1990, Danny was looking into something new to get into. A friend of his suggested the Innslaw scandal. The Institute for Law and Social Research was a nonprofit founded by William Hamilton in 1973. Innslaw was founded by grants from the LEAA. This allowed Hamilton and his wife to develop the Prosecutor's Management Information System, which is known as PROMIS.
By 1980, Congress voted to abolish the LEAA, which led William to convert his company to a for-profit corporation and concentrate on marketing his software. In 1982, the Department of Justice granted William $10 million over a three-year period to adapt his software program to the needs of the U.S. attorneys. By February of 1985, they withheld almost $2 million from Innslaw. The Hamiltons filed a lawsuit in 1986. Danny decided that he would contact William to discuss the story.
As they talked, he became interested, especially since it involved something that he knew a lot about.
Which was?
Computers. His interest peaked when William told him that the Department of Justice had tasked Michael Riconosciuto to modify the PROMIS software by creating a backdoor.
What was this used for?
Oh, you know, just to spy on, you know, 88 countries that had purchased the software from the United States government. William was contacted by Michael and was really excited to get Danny in contact with him. Danny looked into Michael's background and realized that he was digging into way more than just computer software. After a few conversations and Danny confirming what Michael told him, he began to sense that he may have tapped into a trial of some of the largest conspiracies of his time. We won't go into all of the conspiracies, but we are sure that there are some you guys know. Area 51, the SNL crisis, the 1980 October surprise, the Iran hostage crisis, Iran-Contra, and Flight 103.
BBC iFair, the bombing of Pan Am, Pine Gap in Australia, which is the Area 51.
I did not know that.
Yep. The Cabezon Wackenhut Arms and Nugent Hand Bank.
And how many of these did you know?
Let's see. Area 51, the hostage crisis, Iran, Pine Gap, Pan Am. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the Iran hostage crisis was during one of the Olympics. If I'm not mistaken. But yeah, Pine Gap is our Area 51 of Australia.
Never knew that.
Yes, and it's pretty much abandoned now.
Yeah, I only knew one of them, and that was Area 51. Which, I mean, really, all of these happened before my time, so.
I don't hold it against you.
Yeah. Or, like, they've also could have happened when I was young, so, you know.
I mean, I have to keep you entertained.
Oh, true. Along with these, there was talk of weapons and drug trade between countries. Contra war chemicals and bio-warfare weapons. To Danny, he found a story of a lifetime. Sadly, it took his life before he could ever finish it. To everyone he talked to, his family and his friends, this story causes death. Which, he isn't the only author to lose his life covering this.
Spill the tea.
There was a book titled The Octopus, Secret Government, and the Death of Danny Casalero. It was co-written by Ken Thomas and Jim Keith. On September 7th, 1999, Jim was put under anesthesia for a normal routine surgery on his fractured tibia. Sadly, Jim didn't survive the surgery.
It's really sad. And it does come about kind of weirdly, but I mean, Kitty just had a bad time with the surgery.
I'm not sure.
The anesthesia. Yeah,
you know, I'm not sure. But Kim went ahead and finished the book and dedicated a chapter to Jim.
Joseph Daniel Casalero was laid to rest at Columbia Gardens Cemetery in Arlington, Virginia.
One thing that has always stood out to me and made me scratch my head is that right before Danny was lowered into the ground, a decorated military official placed a medal on top of his casket. The man left right after and left everyone at the funeral confused.
Veteran?
No, he wasn't even in the military.
That's weird, because it really when my dad passed away, we actually had to have his honorable discharge papers, which is a DD-214.
Yeah.
So he could have military rites performed at his funeral.
Yeah.
And you're telling me somebody from a highly distinguished military man is going to come and place a medal on top of his?
It's weird.
That's very weird.
But I also see us visiting his grave soon.
Listen, I'm not going to lie and be like, bitch, I know where we're going to be. Because I know exactly where we's going to be.
We are going to go visit Danny soon.
Absolutely we are. Yeah. Kudos to him, too. I mean, absolute kudos to him.
Yeah.
Because whistleblowing is extremely hard. Mm-hmm. It's, you have to have all your facts. I mean, just like a criminal trial, like you are showing all the corruption that is going on inside of businesses, inside of our government. Did you know that there was a time that there was a scandal with the U.S. military because they were buying all this like ridiculous amount of tools and stuff like that? And one of them was a gold hammer. Oh, yeah, like, it was this huge scandal. I mean, I can remember my parents talking about it, and I was maybe, like, 6 years old.
Like, when it girl, happened. I wasn't alive. No. How would I know about a gold hammer?
I mean, there was all kinds of crazy stuff in there. There was, like, gold toilets. Like, I mean, insane amount of stuff. I mean, insane.
Never knew that.
Yes, but I mean, there's just so much with this case that makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
I do know for depression, and especially someone who is wanting to end their life, they do a complete 360 with their personality, from being down and distraught to they're overly eager, they're laughing there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just so much more to this and things of that nature. And just my gut tells me this was not a suicide.
Yeah, same.
Like, at all. I mean, whoever done this, they've done a very messy job. Mm-hmm. I will say that much. Because this is nothing as a suicide whatsoever.
And I will say, you know, I tried to do as much research as I could on this case, and I did watch some of the Netflix docuseries on it. I kind of fell asleep during the first episode, which this was like when it first came out. I really haven't watched it since, which I haven't had the time, because, you know, for this, we were, you know, getting ready for our Facebook live stream. We were working on other cases, and like, I was working on this one secretly, so like you wouldn't know anything, while we were working on our last two cases. So I really just haven't had the time to, you know, watch the docuseries. But
only thing I know is just I'm gonna give props to whoever did this to him.
Yeah,
buddy, you've done a job.
Oh yeah,
you've done a job. And the fact that you've got a medical examiner to rule it a suicide. The fact that you had a funeral home embalm his body, to which embalming, you are draining everything out.
And here's my thing. He was a writer. if they slice a tendon, which I don't know what, like, hand he was dominant with, they slice a tendon, he's never writing again.
Not only that, but typing.
Yeah, like, he could do nothing, so it's kind of a big F you to him for whoever did it.
I mean, it's just...
There's, like, so much to this case that, like... And I feel like, you know, we've only scratched the surface of it. Like, I don't want to get too deep into it because, you know, I'm not trying to solve a conspiracy.
Baby, I am. I love them.
Okay, well, they can come for you, not me.
And you know what I have said. I will go out with the most random thing happening to me.
I know, but, like, it's just, you know, you... want to go so deep into something, but at the end of the day, you're like, oh, I don't know how deep I want to go into this and all of that. So, I mean, there's probably so much more to this case that, you know, we really haven't even touched.
I mean, there's also parts of a case that we have covered
that we don't touch.
That we can't even touch.
Yeah.
Because it's still investigated and things mm-hmm. of that nature. I mean, it just frustrates me, though, to know how corrupt, another life lesson, the government is not for you.
Yeah, and I will say...
they are not for you.
I will say, from, like, what I've seen and heard and, you know, seen online, the Martinsburg police have actually tried to solve this case. So, I want to say, you know, maybe not back in the day because, you know... they really, you know, didn't search it. They're like, oh, suicide. But now, you know, the case is still open. And, I mean, they have tried to figure out who did it.
But you yourself know how many of our cases are so mm-hmm. unsolved.
Yeah.
They are still unsolved. Mm-hmm. And I will give kudos to anybody who goes in and opens up a cold case yeah. and tries their best to solve it.
I mean, I would love to.
I'm all about that and stuff like that because there are things we have noticed in some of our going over case files mm-hmm. and things of that have been screwed up.
Yeah. And I mean, you know.
And it hinders.
Yeah. And I mean, we have tried to reach out to Crime Stoppers. Still haven't gotten email back. Still trying. Crime Stoppers, we would love to work with you.
Yes.
But, like, they do their best. And, I mean, I know they can only give tips and stuff. But, you know, we have been asked to give case files to the sheriff's department before. And they're like, how do you have this? Like, we don't even have this. I'm like...
don't worry about it.
I'm like, you got to be in the know. Like, you got to go straight to the source and... you know, it's weird because I want to help as much as I can, but I know, you know, being just a normal person, you know, you technically can't, even though, like, I would just love to, like, scan in the documents and digitize them, like, let me put them in a folder for you. But, you know, there is just so much to this case and, like, every other unsolved case, but this one, to me... you kind of have more because of, like, the circumstances and the high profile of this case, the high profile of Danny. Like, oh no, there's just so much to it. Yeah.
These are the cases I want solved.
Yeah.
These are. And I don't care what anybody thinks, what your political stance is, if you're a conspirator or not. Mm-hmm. I do recommend it, though. It's so much fun because there's more conspirators out there than what you ever thought of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a full tinfoil hat on yet. I have, like, a little tinfoil cap, not like a...
not like me.
No.
But I will say his family, just like any other case...
deserves justice.
Absolutely. They mm-hmm. deserve justice. They deserve to be at peace.
Yeah.
And you know... that they're not at peace because they know that their son would not do this.
Yeah.
It's been 35 years since the death of Danny Casolaro, and his case is still one of the most mysterious ones to come out of the Mountain State. If you or anyone you know have any information on the death of Danny, you can anonymously contact Crime Stoppers at 304 855-7867.
We will be back next week with a brand new case and a little surprise for everyone. If you find yourself enjoying Mountain State Mysteries, take a second to follow, download, and rate the show on your favorite podcast platform. It helps others find good West Virginia true crime podcasts.
Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube, all at Mountain State Mysteries.
Do you have a case you want us to cover? Send us an email at mountainstatemysteries304@gmail.com.
For the show notes, check out our website, mountainstatemysteriespodcast.com.